Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Carmanah Technologies Corporation second quarter 2016 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. Before beginning its formal remarks, Carmanah would like to remind listeners that certain portions of today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements that reflect views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in these forward-looking statements. For more information on forward-looking statements and the company's risks and uncertainties relating to such forward-looking statements, please read the Carmanah annual report as filed on SEDAR and which is also posted on the website www.carmanah.com. All currency amounts are expressed in U.S. dollars with the exception of the company's TSX-listed share price, which is quoted in Canadian dollars. The company's financial statements are prepared in accordance with IFRS or International Financial Reporting Standards. During this call, the company would also refer to adjusted EBITDA and non-IFRS financial measures, which is calculated as earnings before interest, income taxes, amortization, stock-based compensation, and various one-time charges, which are detailed in this publicly filed management discussion and analysis. Carmanah uses this metric internally in addition to others to make strategic decisions and evaluate their performance. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star zero and an operator will assist you at any time. I would remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Wednesday, August 10th, 2016, at 10:00 A.M. Pacific Time and 9:00 A.M. Eastern Time. I would like to turn the call over to Mr. John Simmons, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Christine. Good morning. As the operator said, I'm John Simmons. I'm joined on this call by Evan Brown, our Chief Financial Officer. On July 7th, we released preliminary and selected financial information for our second quarter. Last night, after the close of market, we released our full second quarter results, which are now on SEDAR. As is our practice on these calls, Evan and I will make a few opening comments and then open the floor for questions from the analysts, and we encourage questions from shareholders as well. Let's start with a financial review of the quarter. Evan?
Thank you, John. Our consolidated revenues for the quarter were up $3.8 million or 24% over 2015. On a year-to-date basis, our revenues were up $11.9 million or 44%. A significant portion of this revenue increase was due to the inclusion of the results from the Sabik Group, which we acquired in July 2015. In the quarter, Sabik contributed revenue of $6 million, while our illumination segment also grew by $700,000 or 26%. Offsetting this growth was a comparative revenue decline from the remainder of the signals segment of $800,000 and a decline in our power segment of $2.1 million. Our signals segment decline was largely due to our airfield ground lighting business, which was down by $1.4 million in the quarter. This was partially due to the significant large project shipped in the same period of 2015, combined with a quarter whereas no comparable project was shipped in 2016. The decline in our power segment of $2.1 million was entirely due to lower revenue recognized in our on-grid vertical, which suffered from project delays, pushing expected revenue recognition to the third and fourth quarters of 2016. Second quarter sales in our off-grid vertical were up 10% over the same period in 2015. Carmanah's consolidated gross margin percentage was up 1.8% to 36.2% in the quarter. On a year-to-date basis, it was up 0.9% to 35.6%. These consolidated increases are due to a shift in the overall revenue to higher margin signals segment from the lower margin power segment. Carmanah's operating expenses have continued to trend downwards as a percentage of revenue over the last eight quarters. In the quarter, sales and marketing expense was 8.6%, R&D was 4.5%, and G&A was 13.5% as a percentage of revenue. While we expect to continue to achieve operating leverage with sales and marketing and G&A expense, we also expect to be ramping up product development spending in the coming quarters, which will offset some of the operating leverage. John will speak to this in a minute. In June 2016, we signed an updated credit facility agreement with CIBC, which improved the term of our facility by eliminating the need for the first tranche to be supported by EDC and setting the interest rate on both tranches to US LIBOR plus 3%. This represents an approximate savings of $240,000 over the remaining 4 years of the term loan. In the quarter, the company generated adjusted EBITDA of $2.7 million, or 14%, up 8% from $2.5 million in the same period of 2015. Net income in the quarter was $1.3 million, down from net income of $10.3 million in the second quarter of 2015. The comparative decrease in net income was attributable to the recognition of a $9.9 million tax asset in 2015. Excluding the effect of the tax asset in 2015, second quarter net income was up $0.9 million, or 69%. Cash generated from operations in the quarter was $4.3 million, up from negative $3.8 million in the second quarter of 2015. This improvement is a result of the continued profitability and the company's focus on cash conversion cycles. As of June 30th, 2016, the company's cash balance was $18.9 million. I'll send it back to you, John.
Thanks, Evan. Before we open for questions, I've just got a couple of comments. First, while I'm really pleased with our Q2 financial results, I continue to encourage our shareholders to take a longer-term view of our results. As Evan noted, while we had a good quarter in our airfield ground lighting business, our Q2 2015 comparative was extraordinarily strong, which tends to make that business's performance this year look poor, which is really not the case. All of this is to say that there is and will always be some ebb and flow in these businesses in any short-term period. Accordingly, I think it's better that we think of our business over a longer term and view the horizon rather than the tips of our toes. And a tips of our toes analysis is all we get if we focus too hard on any specific quarter. That said, I'm quite satisfied with our Q2 results and the progress we are making with our business plan. And speaking of our business plan, I want to draw everyone's attention to this quarter's management discussion and analysis that has been totally reformatted. Our new MD&A succinctly sets out our vision, our strategy, and our tactical goals. We believe that if we can execute well on these tactical goals, we will deliver great long-term results. And because these tactical goals are so important, it's our intention in each successive quarter to report on our tactical goal progress in a report card format. In short, we are setting out what is important, and we plan to chart our progress in a forthright manner. When we are running ahead, we'll celebrate. When we're running behind or have setbacks, we'll share these as well. Also, I want to foreshadow some changes to our R&D expenditure levels through the balance of 2016 and into 2017. Our increased spend at an approximate marginal increase of 2% is being devoted to our illumination division and will include market research, the development of a new go-to-market plan, but mostly a speed-up of our new product platform. This increase in spend may have a modest impact on near-term reported profitability, but we think spending into this high-potential program is a great investment. And so I think I'll leave it at that. Operator, please cue for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. Our first question comes from Deepak Kaushal from GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. And John and Evan, thanks again for the details on the strategy in the MD&A. I wanted to dig into that a little bit more and kind of understand more some of the pieces of your long-term vision. And I'll start by asking about the signals business. And if I'm parsing out the vision and where you want to be in terms of leadership, I'm wondering if non-solar powered signals, I know that in the illumination side, you want to stick with solar lighting for infrastructure. In the signals business, do non-solar powered signals fit into the strategy or the vision here? What kind of role do those product segments play in your future plans?
Sure. Well, first, good morning, Deepak, and thanks for the question. We see this vision in signals as advanced LEDs for infrastructure, and the word solar doesn't apply there. Now, solar is a power source that we use in signals and for some of our signals products, but not necessarily all of them. And so it is an important distinction. We think that our core competency and our expertise goes to making high-efficiency products using LEDs that have, as I said, a very small energy budget. Sometimes these products are properly powered by solar, and sometimes they are properly powered by the grid. But all of them are swept up in our vision to be the leader in these spaces.
Okay. And I guess if we look at 5 years, can you hazard a guess as to what that mix might be in terms of how big connected versus solar would represent, or is that too far away to tell?
I have to tell you, I don't think I've ever thought of our world in terms of what proportion would be solar and which portion would be connected. I think that these are situational by nature. We're still in a world where if we're talking about high light output LEDs, they still have a power budget that is impractical for solar. But what we know about LEDs is that the efficiency of these light emitting diodes is continuing to improve at a rapid rate. I know that our partner Cree, who produces our LED luminaires for our illumination division, has a target of developing a 300 lumens per watt device within 3 years, and the current state of the art is half of that. So that same technology leverages into signals products. And it's highly possible that the light output requirements for some of the signals, especially in the aviation obstruction world, that are not practical for solar today, just because of size and configuration, power demands, will be in the future. So I think that this is going to be a fast-changing world. The good news is that every iteration of these products consumes less energy for the same output, and solar continues to become less costly, and the PV modules continue to become more efficient. And as these moving technology curves combine, there are going to be all sorts of sort of interesting nuances and possibilities in terms of solar power in these devices. So You know, it's an interesting question. I'll actually think about it more deeply about what proportion might be solar versus.
Maybe a different way. I mean, simply put, it if somebody thinks of Carmanah solar powered lights or solar powered signals, this seems to significantly expand the addressable market to broader signals. Is that a fair assumption?
I think it's an absolutely fair assumption. It's accurate. You know, the SABIC group of companies that we acquired the vast majority of their product line. While it's all LED, all advanced LEDs with very efficient energy budgets, the vast majority of it is grid connected. So it's not like we're not there already. But I think, as I said, this is a very dynamic world, and the change in power sources will change as both the power demands of the device lower and the efficiencies of solar and the cost of solar improve. So there's those convergence of curves.
Great. My second question, and I only have three, if I may. You go through a lot of discussion on innovation, product innovation. You talk
right.
about machine-to-machine connectivity and your goals there.
What
are you mentioned some of your platforms are connected today, but 8 out of 30 of your product platforms have that capability. Are customers using that capability today? What kind of ROIs are they seeing, or can you expect them to see for this kind of connected light with a monitoring service attached to it?
Yeah. Boy, the returns are going to vary, but I think that the connectivity question is really a good one. I'd almost turn it around, Deepak, and say that if we're not able to achieve a complete Internet of Things or machine-to-machine connectivity over a short period of time, we will not be able to lead the game here. So I think that the demands and expectations of customers will grow quickly over time, and I think we'll help set those demands, that devices will do much more than they've done in the past. And you think of sea change events in the signal space. The first sea change was the adoption of LED, which had a lower power budget and the ability to be solar powered, and these were pretty important changes in the signals world. But still, and this started in the mid-90s, but still up until even just recently, these were just, I use this word a bit with tongue-in-cheek, or this phrase tongue-in-cheek, these were dumb flashing lights. They just blinked, and there were lights that blinked. And, you know, they were good lights, and, you know, they didn't expend a lot of energy in being high output, but that's all they did. So we're going through another sea change, and that sea change is beginning now, where these lights, their primary function is a light, but they'll start to pick up all these other functions along the way. And they're ideal. These are ideal pieces of real estate with which to gather data and to report. And the reporting of data will be, you know, the data will be different by device and by situation. But the expectation will be that customers will be able, for the lifetime of their product, of the products they buy from us and potentially others, they will be able to remotely understand things that are happening at the installation site. And that could be everything from the health of the primary device, the light, but it could also be gathering data and transmitting it as a point of transmission. And so the uses of these products are going to be quite different as we move. And I would submit, and I personally believe, that we're entering this next sea change that will obsolete the installed base of dumb flashing lights, which will be replaced by lights that continue to perform that function, but also have the ability to transmit data for all sorts of reasons. I think that in the signal space, They will be, some of the uses will be improved safety. So in other words, keeping safety standards to a higher level by anticipating when lights would fail or when lights have failed so that there can be either preventative or rapid response to an outage. But there's also all sorts of other data that can happen along the way. And you're right, we have about 8 of our product platforms have this capability now in our signal space. But my commitment is that every one of our devices will be connected and capable of talking and supplying data to cloud-based systems within a 3-year period. Pretty aggressive schedule, but, we're going to do it.
Great. Just to make sure I understand that data capability properly. So by an example, could we can possibly see like an ACE navigation that has a capability to detect weather current or water temperature and feed that as well as lighting data back to a control center?
Absolutely. The data is, the nature of the data is almost unimportant. In our current devices that are really just in the aids to navigation world, we have deployed and have for more than a year the first system of its kind where the data that's gathered at a buoy, so a floating buoy in a coastal navigation system, reports first, am I in the right location? So there's a geofence in which the buoy must reside, and if that buoy becomes untethered and floats away, then it's an obvious there's obvious safety implications to that. So that's what it reports. It reports on the health of the light. What's the battery voltage? Is the light functioning the way it should? And that information is transmitted to a maintenance authority. There's accelerometers in these devices so that if a ship hits a buoy, when typically there can be a liability issue, that event is reported to the satellite and then to a cloud-based monitoring system. This is all in place for us already. Adding other sensors to gather other data is now a logical extension. So you could look at current, temperature, weather. There could be video, security cameras. There's a wealth of different, I'll call them electrical load and data that could be put in conjunction with these devices. There is a world of possibility. Which of these will have ultimate customer demand? And where there will be returns for customers, I think we remains to be seen. This is part of our ongoing investigation. But what excites me about the signals business and the sea change is that we're not just in a race to the bottom. I mean, for a while after the first sea change of bringing LEDs into these signals products, the race was, okay, who can build a cheaper product? And Carmana and our competitors were all in the business of trying to cost reduce their products while maintaining the efficiency of that dumb flashing light. And all of that does is shrink the size of our industry. Much more important to us, and I'm sorry there's a long answer, but I'm pretty passionate about this, much more important to us is understanding how we might affect a really positive economic benefit that goes beyond just the cost of the light for our customers. So if we can now start to reduce the maintenance costs, if we can improve safety, and safety is always a hard one to put a value on, but if we can do some of these things, then we ultimately justify this greater capability, and I think we can both speed the replacement cycle of the existing devices, but also command higher prices, which allows us to attain and maintain high gross margins in this space. So it's really an exciting time in this world, one where we're just on the cusp of some pretty rapid change.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Sounds quite exciting.
It's a long answer. You made the mistake of asking me a question.
I certainly appreciate it. My last question, and I have three, and this is my last. On capital allocation, looks like you've turned the corner, second quarter in a row, cash generation, quite substantial cash this quarter relative to the history of the company. Can you just review your capital allocation? You know, you paid a bit of debt in the quarter. You had a bit of a stock buyback subsequent to quarter end. You're planning on doing more acquisitions and investing in R&D. If you can just kind of review with us the mindset on capital allocation, how we should expect that going forward.
Yeah, sure. Our current sort of management group is about 3 years into this program. We tried to raise the operating performance of the business initially, and now we're trying to raising the operating performance is about sort of generating revenue and having sort of smooth operations. And now we're trying to make all of this more efficient. We think of cash conversion cycles as and improving that to include a host of activities where we think we can generate lots of cash from our current operations and balance sheet, which is available for more investment. I'll get to the investment side of this in a second. So what we're doing, obviously, is to work on better terms and collecting our receivables, and this is the standard sort of blocking and tackling of trying to run a good business. Key element for us, however, and the most difficult task is to really get good at forecasting, and that's the hardest thing that we face. So if we can become really good forecasters, we can impact our supply chain so that we have the right supplies and materials available for final assembly, and we can limit our need to invest in those inventories. And that's the sort of the magic bullet for us in terms of, you know, managing our balance sheet for maximum cash generation. Sort of on the investment side, I think what we want to try to get is more operating leverage on G&A and sales and marketing expense. That'll allow us to do what we foreshadowed today, starting to spend more on development, and I would say invest in our future. And whether that's investing in innovation or investing in acquisitions, I view these as almost the same. I think we've got a responsibility to maximize the ability of our balance sheet to do more of this, and we are continue to do so. I know that Evan has each of our division managers now looking at the amount of capital they deploy in their business. We think, what's our current cost of capital that you calculate in your analysis?
It's about 13.2%.
So our cost of capital about 13.2%, and we're plotting and graphing each of our operating businesses so that we're taking a look at what kind of return on capital they're able to individually achieve, and is that above or below the line, and what steps can we make to make those changes. So we're, and I look at it as really just good blocking and tackling. We're starting to get better at running these businesses. That should allow us to optimize our balance sheet, which gives us more to spend, either internally on future development or making some money available for acquisitions. Does that go to your question?
Yes, absolutely. I appreciate the detailed answers. Certainly, and the time to let me ask questions.
Great, sure. All right, anything else?
Nope, that's it for me.
Okay, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mark Murray from Cormark Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi,
I think it's Mac.
Yeah, that's right, that's me.
Hi, Mac.
Yeah, hi, guys. Just sticking to the strategy then, can you put in context a little bit the application of the technology on that machine-to-machine communication? Is it on par, is the effort you need to do on par with what was done years ago in marrying LEDs with optics and battery and solar panel? Or is it something that you use like a sort of off-the-shelf available protocols and infrastructure that you're really just sort of tacking on? Like, can you give some idea of what the hurdles and risks and challenges are?
Sure. The biggest hurdle that we have in everything that we do is energy budget. So certainly the cost, right? So we our strategy, and I really want to, and it's a good question because it allows me to focus on two elements that we think are absolutely important if we're going to be successful, which is that we have to provide for our customers in the most environmentally sensitive solutions that are available on a comparative basis with our customers. But we also have to provide at the same time products or solutions that provide the greatest economic benefit for our customers. And we don't think and we think that the combination of those two things is the winning combination. And if we ask our customers to pay a premium for things that are environmentally sensitive, that will not work in a big way. And we also think that we're in a world that says even if we come up with the most economically beneficial solution, if it doesn't have some environmental sensitivity, it's not going to work for us. So why am I telling you all this? It's important and incumbent that in developing our machine-to-machine capability, that we keep our bill of materials very low to make this happen. So in other words, a very low capital add or bill of materials add for every device, and that we manage a system where the data transmission costs are going to be exceptionally low as well. For if we don't do that, we will devise systems that now need to be larger, more expansive, more energy consumptive, and typically could be connected with data transmission systems that are also expensive and will just not meet our goals. So how do we do there and how difficult it is? We've done it before. So, you know, the fact that we have a running start at this is helpful. I think that it's fair to say that this work is not trivial. So, I don't think a simple integrator can go and buy a bunch of components and bolt them together and make this happen easily. That said, we feel that we can accomplish this easily. Is it akin to marrying LEDs and solar that happened in the middle of the 1990s? I would say similar expertise is required if we're going to get the outcomes that we absolutely need, which is a low bill of materials cost, a highly efficient system, in other words, a very small energy budget, and we need to be quite smart in terms of minimizing data transmission costs.
Okay. And just don't want to sort of beat a dead horse, just in how do you expect, like, to communicate that? Are you going to every quarter talk about some technical milestones, or will you just sort of wait until the products are out and say, here's our new products and here are the new verticals or new customers we're bringing in? I'm trying to, if we want to carry forward the updating of this, I just want to be able to sort of communicate with our clients how you're progressing on that.
Yeah, well, this is goes right to the heart of how we're taking this report card style MD&A reporting. We've set out what we think is important for the development of the business, and as I said in my opening comments, we're going to report on our progress. And when we're ahead, we'll celebrate. And when we're behind, we'll tell you that too. Right now we're reporting that we've got, you know, 8 products that have this capability. My commitment is that every one of our products that in our strategic groups of signaling and lighting will have as a standard an IoT connectivity. So there's a measuring post, and we can do that along the way. There will be there may be certain events along the way that we would report separately about, and I don't want to foreshadow anything, but you know, when there are things that are material by nature that relate to this, then we won't be waiting for MD&A. We'll just report that separately.
Okay. Okay. So just turning to the, you know, nitty gritty on modeling. In terms of illumination, we've seen that sort of lumpiness over the last 12 months. We're expecting to see that increase into next year as we get as you launch these new products. Should we expect for the remainder of this year the same sort of quarterly up and down or lumpiness that we've seen? Is that what you're kind of budgeting for?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, I make a distinction between when I talk about this between our old business plan and our new business plan, and the business plan isn't just how we go to market, but it's everything about product, market, and plan. The addressable market that we have now in the developed world is really quite small and hard to identify. You've heard me say this before, but the customers for solar-powered outdoor lights now in the United States are customers who either can demonstrate two conditions. They either can't access the grid, so they're forced to look at solar lights, or it's really inconvenient to access the grid. In other words, you know, to put an electrical service way out in the middle of nowhere would be very expensive, so it's impractical. So those are great customers for us now, but obviously a very thin sliver of a market. Or we have customers that, in spite of financial costs of solar compared to grid-tied lights, are prepared to buy them for other reasons. Typically, these are environmental reasons. There's sometimes security reasons. So we do a lot of, you know, we do a lot of work on military bases where they want perimeter lighting that is not connected to the grid for security reasons. So we're really talking about, in the current situation and up until now in the developed world, really a small addressable market. And you've also heard me say that our thesis is that when we can reduce the cost of our product to the point that it is less costly on a capital basis than the cost of installing grid-tied lights, in other words, the standing incumbent or standard product today, that we believe that our addressable market for new construction expands dramatically. And that's the situation we'll find ourselves in beginning next year with a new product platform. So is the business of the, I'll call it today's or the old business plan, is it going to continue to be lumpy? The answer is absolutely. We'll get a deal, we'll lose a deal, it'll be dry for a while, it'll run hot for a while. And I think, you know, obviously we want to win all the business we can, but I don't think that's particularly meaningful compared to what we're doing for the future. What we're doing for the future is now addressing building products, building plans for market so that we can now participate in an addressable market that will be substantial. It's going to be easier to identify, and we expect a big take up. You've heard me say that even though this business is only, I think illumination is about 20% of our signal size today, I think in 5 years' time, it will dwarf what we do in signals. It sounds like I may lose all credibility as a forecaster around that, but I just what I believe. So, anyhow.
No, that's okay. No, that's helpful.
So, yeah. So, you ask, will it continue to be lumpy? The answer is yes.
And then just lastly, you mentioned cost of capital. The stock looks like it's stable here in the low fours. Like it's, have you changed any of your metrics on how you look at acquisitions? Given that the stock's not sliding anymore, that it's actually looks like it's got it's sort of established a base. Do you use that as a new way of looking at your cost of capital going forward, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a great question. The first thing is that our belief as a board and management that our stock price is woefully undervalued, and so we would never consider issuing shares at these prices from Treasury unless there was an acquisition where the dynamics of that acquisition were such that it would be tremendously accretive. So we would be very reluctant to issue shares. We'd only do so if a very unique situation presented themselves that provided a lot of accretion opportunity. That won't happen. The valuations of the targets that we would have will be, if they're the kind of targets we want, they will not be valued so low that we can achieve those accretion targets at today's stock price. So having found that door closed, I think we are being creatures of our environment. We will look elsewhere for financing in the near term. My view is that we have a very strong balance sheet. There is a very active senior debt market in the world, and if it to us, there would be more opportunity on the debt side right now than on the equity side to help us achieve some acquisition goals. And I would say it has us thinking differently about the businesses we own and an effort to stay more concentrated on the strategic businesses is also the case, which means that we may have some really good but potentially redundant assets here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, great.
That's kind of that's more of a stream of consciousness rather than a succinct answer, but I hope you get the sense there that we think we've got lots of debt capacity. We don't like our share price. We think we are being overlooked and undervalued by the market. Our own opinion: the market is the market. It's always right. I've been told so. But I don't think we would be inclined to issue shares. And I can't see a scenario where we would find an acquisition that would present really accretive possibilities for us in on the basis of issuing shares in and around these price levels. And again, the good news is I don't think we have to, certainly in the near term, for the activities that we have in our gun sight.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, John.
Okay. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ravi Lasol from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Yes, morning, guys. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, it's great, Ravi. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Just a housekeeping question first regarding R&D spend. Now, if I understand this correctly, you're expecting $3 million ramp up in second half of the year. Your quarterly run rate is close to about 800,000 per quarter. So should I expect something close to $5 million in R&D spend for the second half of the year?
No, Evan, you want
to? No, that's a $0.3 million. R&D increase spend for the rest of the year?
0.3.
So 300,000.
About 300,000. All right. I get it. Okay, thank you. Then second question, with respect to the number of customers that you already have for Internet of Things lights, that the signal LED lights, you have one customer right now, or do you have many more than one customer? Because I know of one customer in the marine space. Do you have more already?
Yeah, we have more. We have others in other spaces, but it's still in its infancy.
Okay. And I understand. So first of all, you'll have a little bit of uptick in R&D expenditure. But then once these lights start going out, will you offer your customers maybe some subsidized packages early on to drive widespread adoption of these tools? And could that lead to some margin pressure in the near term and then finally lead to margin expansion over the longer term? How are you thinking about your margins as these products come out?
So I think the question you're asking is, do the business models change or, given this new capability? And the answer is probably. But how specifically will vary vertical by vertical, and will be somewhat dependent on the value that we can deliver to these customers, which will be different in different circumstances. I would say at a base case, I think customers will expect very shortly that for no subscription revenue, they'll be able to have some sort of basic monitoring of their devices over a long period of time. And then there will be value-add pieces on top of that. But I will caution you to say that that we haven't given full thought yet to how these business models will change on a vertical by vertical basis.
Thank you. And just final question, I don't know how much you can say on this, but I'm wondering, are there any large new material contracts that you guys are working on for SABIC, for Signals Division, that could accelerate the growth rate in the near term, or any other major projects that you guys are excited about, any new large projects that you guys have closed in the near term, any color that you can provide on that will be very helpful. Thank you.
You're quite right that there are no comments that we would be able to make if there were any material contracts that were not quite realized as yet. So if you hear me ducking that question, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Perfect. That's all for me. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Raveel.
Thank you. And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. Mr. Simmons, there are no further questions. Please continue.
Thanks very much, operator. So I think we will conclude at that. We would always invite your questions, and you can follow us either by email through our the investor page on our website or call us directly. And I want to thank everybody who attended today and the analysts for their questions. Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. If you have any further questions, please call Carmana Investor Relations toll-free number at 877-722-8877. Thank you for your participation. Please disconnect.